Great. This is part three. We're still in the first parak of Megillas Rosh, which is amazing. Megillas Rosh is so loaded with so many different, very important details about our history, our destiny of the Jewish people. What does it mean to be part of Klal Yisrael? We'll put everybody on mute. And we're going to learn today some amazing halachos, some amazing laws about Geiros. Before we get there, we have to really analyze one individual who is seems to be a flyer in the story. Really somebody that makes her entrance and then exits pretty quickly into the story. But Chazal paint a very dark picture about this individual, referring to Orpah. Who is Orpah? What does she represent? Not only in the story, but in the future of the Jewish people. And there, I would say, we'll learn the psukim. We saw some of them last week, that she's okay. She married one of Elimelech and Naomi's children. And that's all we know about her. And then she left. So we'll analyze this a little bit more. Let's just go through, just review what we did. So we began with the beginning of the story. It was the times of the Shvot HaShoftim. One second. It was not a great time for the Jewish people. There was a famine. There was a family that left because of the famine, a wealthy family, an influential family, a Torahic family. They left, and ultimately that led to their demise. Elimelech, the patriarch of the family, he died. The two sons married foreign women. We discussed whether they were actually converted before or not. That was last week's discussion about Machlon and Kilian, who they were. Some say they were Gedolei Hador, and some paint very dark pictures about who they represented and what they were in their lives, that they weren't such great guys. They married foreign women, and they died too. And then Naomi's bereft of her whole family. She's left with these two daughters-in-law. And there's a whole discussion, which we analyzed last week, about you go, you stay, you go, you stay. And it was like, there was like a fight on the road, whether they, and they both, initially both wanted to go with her. They both wanted to go with her. Naomi wanted to go back home to the place that she knew and she feels comfortable with, and that's in Beis Lechem. And both daughters-in-law, in such a beautiful way, wanted to go with her. They felt the responsibility to go and travel with her back home. And we learned the psukim. She says, go back home. What do you want? I can't have any more children. She's very cynical about this whole thing. Just leave, just leave, just leave. So now let's pick it up in Pasuk Yudalit, right here. Pasuk 14. Vatisena kolan. They both start crying. Right? Both of them break out crying. Vatifkena od. Right? And it's, just imagine the scene. There are three women on the road. It's dark at night. And they're all bawling. They're all bawling because they know, like, their life can change in this moment. Where are they going to go? Where are they going to be? Are they going to go with Naomi? Are they going to stay? And now we learn what is going to happen. Vatishak Orpah l'chamosa. Orpah kisses her mother-in-law. She kisses Naomi on the cheek. And she leaves. Right? Thank you so much for allowing me to not go with you. I'm going to go back to my former life. Verus dafka ba. And rusk davak. Davak, devek in modern Hebrew is glue. Rus clinged to her mother-in-law. She clung to her mother-in-law. She said, I am not leaving your side. Right? And we'll get into this a little bit further. But Orpah left. Orpah left and Rus stayed. Now, this is a very important pasuk. If we go to our sources here, you will see the following. Let's go to the Gemara. The Gemara says like this. This is the Gemara in Maseches Sota, which really analyzed this story further. Vatishak Orpah l'chamosa v'rus dafka ba, says the Gemara. Orpah kissed her mother-in-law and left, and Rus stayed. Amar Rabbi Yitzchak, Amar Kadosh Baruch Hu. Right? Rabbi Yitzchak says that Hashem himself, Kivyachol, makes a declaration based on what just happened. Yavou b'nei ha-neshuka, the b'nei ha-neshuka, the descendants of those that kissed will come, the yiplu, and will fall in the hands of the b'nei ha-dvuka. They'll fall into the hands of the ones that clung. That this created like an archetype of two different families that resulted from the b'nei ha-neshuka, Orpah's family, and the b'nei ha-dvuka, the ones that clung, Rus's family. Anyone know who comes out of Orpah?
Goliath,
right? So says the Gemara, continues the Gemara, Darash Rava, Yischar Arba Duma'o Shehorida Orpah L'chamosa, right? The Gemara says they both cried. The Navi says they both cried. The Gemara here tells us that she cried four tears. And in schus of those four tears, Orpah has Zachsav Yasimimena Arba'a Giborim. Comes out of her four warriors. One of the warriors is Goliath. Goliath eventually representing the B'nei ha-Neshuka, one of the children of the one that kissed, he falls into the hands of David, who is a direct descendant of Rus. So this nevuah from a Kadosh Baruch Hu in this Gemara comes true. Question that always bothered me. What did Orpah do that was so bad? What did Orpah do that was so bad that she generated, right? She created a Goliath. Goliath cursed the Jewish people for 40 days. He was a horrible person. It wasn't just he was a warrior and he represented the Plishtim. He was a really bad guy. And not only this, that's one question. Not only that, add to this the following. This is in Rus Rabbah. This is, you know, you read this Medrash, you're like, well, this is crazy. Where does this come from? Amar Rabbi Yitzchak. Where did Orpah go that night? Right? Where did she go that night? She went back home? She went back to her, you know, Rus and Orpah were Moabite princesses. Where did Orpah go right after this story? So says the Gemara, says the Medrash, sorry. Koloso Alayla, that whole night, Shapirsha Orpah Mechamosa, in which Orpah left her mother-in-law. Nisarvu ba ervas goyim shelmea b'nei Adam. She slept with, I can't even say the word intimate, because this is not intimacy. She slept with 100 men. Hahud echsiv, v'hu medaber imam, mimara chasaplishtim, mima'aros, Mimea Orlo Shagayim, she's Arabukola Laila, Rav Tanchuma Omar, and Rav Tanchuma adds, this is now grotesque. Af Kelav Echad. Even she was with a Kelav, a dog, that evening. 100 men and a dog. Right? She just go home. It says the Medrash that this decision that she made caused her now to go on a path of licentiousness. We just read Achrei Moed Kedoshim, Kitoavas Mitzrayim, right? We can't follow in the ways of the Mitzrayim, the Mitzri, and the Canaanite nations in what they do and what they represent. And look at Orpah. And this is, you know, when you look at this Medrash, you're like, how is this connected to the Pshat? How is this related to what we just saw about Orpah? I don't get it.
Rabbi?
Yes.
Does that mean that before she got married to one of Elimelech's sons, before she got married, she was straight. She was okay. You're saying is that because she refused to go, she did not want to go with Naomi,
yeah,
it caused her to morally become this. And she wasn't like this before.
Yeah.
Saint Peter says that she became like this based upon the fact that she did not go back.
Yeah, you could argue, Milton, you could argue what you're saying is correct, that this is who she always was. She always was morally depraved. You know,
But
and this is what she was just, she went back to what she, her old life, you know, she married, she saw this nice guy. Maybe that's what, you know, and that he helped her return from this. That you could say that, but it could be that something happened, like something shifted in this moment. And this caused her to, you know, go on this free for all.
Did Russ or Arpar ever undergo a conversion before this time?
So we saw that was a machlokas. We'll analyze it a little bit further. But at this point, it's still not clear. We saw that the Maharsha says that they did not convert. They did not convert yet. And we saw that the Zohar writes they didn't convert already. Because Chas v'Shalom, the Machlon and Tilly would marry non-Jewish women.
Because if they didn't convert, that would be, wouldn't that also be a contributing factor for their husbands dying?
Yeah. It could.
Why did we
do that? Yeah, it could. What you also see here is the following. This is in the Malbim. The Malbim shows that Hine Shavi Yivimtech, this is the next pasuk that we didn't see yet, but Naomi then says to Rus, go return, just like your sister-in-law returned. And what does that mean? Just like she returned to her foreign gods, you too return to your foreign gods. Meaning, Orpah, I see something in Orpah that really she wasn't genuine. She converted, but she wasn't really genuine in that conversion. So Rus, you follow suit and you return. Right? And it could just be that she wasn't genuine. She's returning back to her old ways that she was, you know, she was a life of the party in Moab, and this, you know, shows how she was. Now, I want to just make two suggestions, neither of which are mine. Personally, one comes from this book called Rising Moon that I said I, you know, based a lot of the Shir Man from Rabbi Moshe Miller. And the other comes from Rabbi Y.Y. Jacobson, who's a prominent speaker and author, Yizman Hazeh. So from just two thoughts about, well, how could it be that she went back to this? So number one is we have to really think about Moab. What was Moab? What did Moab represent? So Moab wasn't just a place that was anti-chesed, as we mentioned. They didn't give bread and water to the Jewish people. But Moab was, you know, the founding father of Moab was Lot. Lot had two daughters, right? Remember the story? Lot thought the world was destroyed, and his daughters got him drunk, and he slept with his daughters. The first son's name was, right, with the oldest daughters was Moab, and the second one was Ammon. And Chazal, you know, take this daughter to task, not for what she did per se, maybe she felt what she was doing was necessary, but what she named her son. She named her son Moav, which means Me'av, from my father. This is not something that needed to be shown off to the entire world, that this is how this happened, right? This is how this nation was created, from my father. But this lack of modesty that she represented really imprinted, you know, the DNA of Moab and who they were, and they became a sexually depraved and immoral society, not just from the anti-chesed aspect, but from this perspective as well. And you see this play out even before this with where Lot came from. Sodom wasn't just a place that represented, you know, immoral anti, you know, hachnasas orchem. It wasn't just that they were not nice people and they didn't like guests. That's what we learn when we are young children. But when they saw the guests in the home of Lot, what did they want to do to them? Right? Just read Rashi. They wanted to, you know, rape all of those guests in the home. That somehow these two things are connected. To be a immoral or unethical society leads to depravity. These two things are connected. Right? Miller goes through this at length in his book, but you see this play out that now, this is what Milty was saying, that she's just going back to the culture that she was used to back then. And that is the thought of Rabbi Miller as to what is going on in this story about how from one moment, you know, seems to be, you know, brings her down this horrible road. The second is from Mary Y.Y. Jacobson. I think this is also a very real, psychologically sound point. Maybe it literally wasn't. Sorry, the garbage truck is coming. My window's open. So maybe it wasn't literally the next night, that very same night. But what's this referring to? You know, we make decisions in life, and we're all faced with decisions that sometimes have very clear answers. There's a good approach and there's a bad approach. And we're not sure which is the right way to do it. And, you know, we could choose the right approach or we could choose the bad. You know, are we going to cheat on that test in junior year in high school in math? That's our call. What are we going to do? Are we going to do that? Are we not going to do that? Then there are other choices that we make in life that it's not clear what is the right thing to do. It's not clear. Orpah here, it was not clear what she should be doing. But Orpah, by choosing to not stay with Naomi, was full of a lot of guilt. This choice caused her a lot of guilt in her life. She would stay up at night and she would think, I made a huge mistake. I can't live with myself because I should have stayed with Naomi. I should not have gone on my own path. Look at this old lady. Who's going to save her? Who's going to take care of her? Rusha go by herself? I should be the one. I should have done it. And sometimes when people can't live, not sometimes, but we can't live. Human beings can't live with guilt. Guilt is something very, very hard to overcome. And after, you know, days and months and years of living with guilt, people need to do things to get rid of the guilt. That causes some people to, you know, the healthy thing is to go to therapy and to speak it out and to try to rectify it in some healthy way, obviously, in a healthy way. But others, they want to cover up the guilt. They want to cover it up. So that causes people to become, you know, cover it up with drugs and alcohol and to numb their minds and their bodies from this decision that has been driving them crazy for their entire lives. And that we see in all societies, you know, that is a problem that occurs when somebody is grappling with so much guilt that they can't overcome it on their own. And sometimes it's not just drugs and alcohol, and other times it's sexual immorality that a person, you know, uses to try to forget about the decisions that they made. So Ray Jacobson suggests this is what is going on over here. Orpah could not live with this guilt. She realized that she made a horrible mistake. And there was no way for her, or she felt, there was no way for her to rectify that mistake. So what does she continue to try to do? Overcome, right? Cover it up. I need to forget about it. So she was with 100 men is insane. 100, right? If we said two, we'd ask a similar question. But it's in excess. That's what people that are addicts do. It's in excess because they need to numb themselves of what exactly they did. And this is what is going on here. Orpah was trying to numb herself of this decision that she made with Naomi. That's, I think, a very deep insight into what was going on. And then Rabbi Jacobson takes it one step further. Now we can understand how she created a Goliath. Goliath, all of a sudden, he became obsessed with destroying the Jewish people. We're trying to get rid of the mistake, right, that his mother made. But how, in a very unhealthy way, how did he try to get rid of that mistake? By destroying the progeny of Rus. Not in a healthy way, by sitting down with David and say, hey, let's talk about this. My mom, your mom? No. This created an animal. an animal that was out of its cage and it could not be taken back. And therefore became the mission of Rus, Orpah's progeny to try to destroy Rus's progeny. All this was stems from one condition, a condition called guilt, that people, the human, our base human desires to cover up, to be mechaper, right? Mechaper means to not just atone, but it means to cover up the guilt, right? And sometimes, right, if you think to Yosef and the brothers, they try to cover up the guilt for many, many years. Eventually, they try to undo it, right? Because lechaper means both things. It means to undo, to atone for, to apologize for. And lechaper also means to cover up. And that's what we, those are our two choices that we can do when we are guilty or we have these feelings of guilt. We can try to cover it up. And the more we cover it up, the worse it becomes. Or we could try to face it head on and to be mechaper and try to atone for the sins that we, or the mistakes and decisions that we have made. So those are two approaches to what was going on in Orpah's mind and how she addressed her decision to leave Naomi. Before I continue, any questions? Okay.
I have a question.
Yes.
I think that if we're saying that Orpah was not like this before this departure, she obviously, Hashem determined that this should be her punishment. I don't think it's such a such a horrible thing on her part. After all, she had a mother and she had a father. So to ask her a child to leave her parents to go with her mother-in-law is not such an outrageous thing that a child chooses to stay with her parents and not go with her mother-in-law, especially yeah. if the marriage was not a long marriage. It was a rather short one from what I understand. So how can she be blamed for that?
Yeah, so I think, you know, Milton, you're asking a great question. How could she be blamed for it? Very often, people that live with guilt, they maybe made the right decision. They didn't do something necessarily wrong, but they can't come to grips with the decision that they made. And in their worldview, they did something horrifically wrong. And it could be that perhaps Orpah didn't make the wrong decision. It's only that Rus made a superhuman decision that we contrast the two. But how does someone react to the decisions that they made? That's their call. That's their decision in life of how they're going to react to it. Orpah decides to react to it in a certain way. You know, sometimes I'm sure that many of us who have children on the line, right, you know, or you yourself, you made a decision that wasn't necessarily bad. You felt tremendously guilty about that decision. You go to your parents and you talk to them about it, or to a friend, and they're like, listen, you were great. You did nothing wrong, even though you feel bad, even though that person is left out in the cold. You yourself did nothing wrong. Orpah did nothing wrong. She felt a tremendous amount of guilt. That's, you know, that's a very important nekuda when it comes to, you know, modern psychology.
Rabbi.
Yeah.
According to the person that says that they were both Megayah, both of them.
Yeah.
How do you explain Naomi pushing them away to go away, knowing that they're new to the fold, that, you know, that they did come from Moab? How could she push them away when everything that we know means to be Makariv them?
Yeah.
Explain that.
So there, it seems like the Rishonim understand that they were able to undo it. That maybe somehow is a conditional based on their marriage to Machlon and Kilyon. And now that was over, they have some type of out. That is, that's the way the Malbim understand. Malbim's not a Rishon, he's an Achron. But that's the way the Malbim understands the story, that somehow they were able to undo it. We don't understand. Today, you can't undo a conversion. That's, you know, somehow that's the way they were understanding it. So now Rus and Naomi are now walking down the path, and we're in Pasuk Tezvav 15. Va'tomer hinei shava yivimtech el ama ve'elohel shuvi achrei yivimtech. So Naomi, she's pretty funny. If you think about how she's talking to her daughters-in-law, she's definitely cynical, and she's even a little bit sarcastic, a tinge of funniness. She's like, you go back to your sister-in-law, like your sister-in-law returned home and followed in that way. You go there too. You know, I don't need you. I'm okay. I'm okay on my own. I can survive. Right? So, Vatomer Rus al tifgi'i bi la'ozveich. It's a very strange language, a very strong language. Rus turns to Naomi and says, al tifgi'i beich. I have in the sources from the Medrash. The Medrash actually says, tifgi'i means like don't hit me. Don't hurt me. That Rus was saying to Naomi, don't like throw me to the side. Don't punch me and like, you know, knock me out and then run away. I want to go with you. And this is, you know, now we begin one of the most famous verses in all of Tanakh. Not just Tanakh. It could be in all of like, you know, poetry. This comes up so many times. Ki el asher telchi eleich, where you walk, where you go, I go. Vesher talini elin, where you sleep, I sleep. Amech ami, my nation's your nation's my nation. Elokayich elokay, your God is my God. Kasher tamusi amus, v'shama keber. And when you die, I'm going to die, and I'm going to be buried there. Kol yase Hashem li v'chol Yosef. May Hashem be the one that swears on my behalf, right? Ki amavis yafrid b'ni uveinich. The only thing that's going to separate us is death. This is where we get the phrase of, till death do us part. Right? It doesn't come from a marriage. It comes from a relationship between a mother-in-law and a daughter-in-law. Till death do us part. V'teira ki mit'ametza silalecha sita. Naomi then says, I see you're not going to change your ways. And she doesn't then give her a hug, embrace her, you know, give her a big kiss. What does she do? She stops talking to her. She's like, okay, leave me alone. Leave me alone. Okay, just come with me. She's a very, you know, Naomi is a bitter woman. She's an embittered woman. She's had a very difficult life. She's like, okay, leave you alone, come with me, and we'll be good.
Rabbi.
Yes.
Is this where Ruth converts?
Yeah. So we're getting to that right now. So we learn from here the source for conversion, or the blueprint, the roadmap to how somebody converts is learned from here. So the Medrash first begins by saying, Mikol Makom, Dati las gayer, right? Ruth says to Naomi, I want to convert. I'm converting no matter what. So if you don't let me convert, I'm going to go somewhere else and convert with them. I'd rather do it with you. And then she says, Diti, my daughter. We don't go to all the places that the non-Jewish people go to. We don't go to there. It was like the theaters, and we don't go to these places. Amrla el asher telchi eleich. I'll go where you go. And then she said, we don't live in places that don't have mezuzahs. That's an interesting one, okay? And then she says, wherever you sleep, I'll sleep. And then she says, there are punishments. There are ramifications, penalties that you get if you're Jewish. You violate Shabbos. Onesh Shkila. Says, your God is my God. I'll follow you the entire way. The entire way. The Gemara Yevamos goes into more detail about all of these, where every single line was a give and take. You know, Ruth says, I'm going to follow you. And Naomi says, we have this and this and this, right? And we have, you know, so many, and each and every time Ruth says, I know, I want it. I want it. To the point where the Rambam, it's amazing. The Rambam says, this is how we convert people to Judaism. Ketzad mekavlim geirei tzedek kishiyavo echad lizgayer min ha'akum. How do we bring in geirei tzedek converts? How do we do it? First, we check into them and see, make sure that you know they're doing it for the right motivations. And we say, Ma Reisa Shabbas Ligayer, why do you want to convert? Don't you know that if you convert, you have a target on your back and on your front, right? And we are the nation that is, there's anti-Semitism in the world, even in the 21st century. Everybody wants to attack them. We're used for the excuse for everything. We get tweets from Mayor de Blasio, right? Just about us. Imam, right? Imam Rani, and we go through this whole speech. Okay, Milti, you like that one. Ani Yodeyav Eini Kadai. And then, and if the convert says, I know, and I don't care, because I want to be part of your destiny, we accept him. Accept him or her right away, right? And what's amazing is, and then we start teaching the ger about certain mitzvos. And what are the mitzvos that we teach? These are mitzvos that are specific to the story of Rus. Modina so avon leket shicha opeo ma'as yosheni. We'll see later on in the story how these specific mitzvos come up. Leket shicha opeo ma'as yosheni, mitzvos that have to do with the field, which actually appeared in Parshas Kedoshim this past week, and actually appears again in Parshas Emor. So we teach them all of these mitzvos, simple mitzvos, right? And then we go on and teach them Chilul Shabbos. And what do we say? If you violate Shabbos, it's stoned, right? If you eat the wrong food, you can get karis. You could die early. You could die young. And this is the conversation, right? This all started based on the conversation that Naomi had with Rus. Same conversation. And the conversation that we're having with Gayrim throughout history, which is amazing. We'll stop here for today. Next week, we will continue and we'll learn a deeper understanding of the connection between Lot and Rus. How this story of Rus converting has ramifications for the fight and the separation between Avram and Lot many, many, many years earlier. And how Rus is rectifying something of the relationship, rectifying the relationship between Avraham and Lot. We'll get to their Bezrat Hashem next week. Today we discussed, did a deep dive, deep psychological dive into Orpah, and we discussed the conversion of Rus. Okay, I wish everybody a great day. It should be a great week for everybody. Everybody should stay healthy and stay safe. And it's always great to learn with everyone.
Thank you, Rabbi. Thank you, Rabbi.